The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
For those of you who were not here last week I gave a presentation on the Satipatthana Sutta, on the discourse on the four ways of establishing awareness. Awareness being my preferred translation now for the word sati. And so I wanted to follow that up with a discussion today about the first of these ways of establishing awareness, first, what's usually called the first foundation of mindfulness, which is establishing awareness through attention to your body, through being present in your body. And one of the surprises for me in my introduction to Buddhist practice many years ago was the centrality of the body. If you read books on Buddhism, it's very easy to think that there is no body, no physical body involved at all. Sometimes people even think it's all intellectual. But in fact, when you enter into the practice stream, in the world of Buddhist practice, in all the traditions that I've practiced in, the tremendous emphasis on being in your body. When I was doing Zen practice, my first practice, that emphasis on the body was not really in the rhetoric of the teaching of Zen, and it wasn't explained so much that how important the body was. You just had to sit in pain. or you had to sit with a very strong posture and not move for 40 minutes at a time. And if you do that for hours on end through a day, sooner or later my knees would hurt quite a bit, or my back would hurt, or be quite uncomfortable. And so, not that I recommend this route for people, but what it did was it put me in my body. And I had to be very present for what was going on for me, or I had no choice but to be present in my body because it was a strong sensation, strong pain that was coming up. And I found that slowly over time what it did was it really made me connected to my body, much more sensitive and aware of what was going on in my body, in a way that was useful. One of the first, early on, one of the first ways that I started seeing it being useful was there were other times in my life where I'd have physical pain, independent of, the arbitrary pain or the voluntary pain of meditation that we had in Zen. And I saw very quickly that what I was learning to do in meditation, of learning to sit and try to be equanimous, be peaceful, be at peace with the pain, not react to it, not push it away, not have self-pity for it, that I would, I started to be able to do that in my normal life as well, my daily life, times when there was physical pain, I had to deal with it because it was just, I got injured or something. And it was very helpful for me to learn how to stay equanimous and peaceful in the intensity of ordinary difficulties in life. One of the things I learned through sitting with pain in my early years was how I made it worse for myself by having aversion to it. How I made it worse for myself by having self-pity about it. How I made it worse for myself by kind of spinning off into my head and planning and thinking and reacting and counting the time, counting the seconds. How long do I have to be here? And all the ways in which my mind kind of got very activated and active by this agitated, restless, I could feel how it actually made the pain worse, made my whole experience of it worse. And if I learned how not to have mind kind of activated by it, that and just stay present, then it would, a lot easier. So that was a very meaningful lesson for me. I don't know if it sounds like meaningful to you. The next important thing for me that I learned was that, and this wasn't so automatic, it came over a few years, but a very important part of the lesson of the importance of being in your body, my body, was that as I learned to sit and the pain kind of dissipated, my body started to kind of fall, kind of settle into the posture and relax into the posture have some ease in this kind of posture here, that the heightened sensitivity of my body, heightened awareness to my body, gave me a lot more information about myself and my life around me. In fact, one of my Zen teachers referred to our bodies as an antenna. And if you stay present for your body, you have this wonderful antenna that gives you a lot of information about inner and outer life. The inner life I could see how small or big twinges of tension that would build up in my body, or movements in my posture, pulling away or leaning forward or sideways or slumping or whatever, all kinds of movements in my posture, what I did with my hands, what was going on with my legs, what was going on with my belly. Belly was an important teacher for me because I used to carry a lot of tension in my belly. And so I started paying attention to that and noticing that. And so all these things would teach me about myself, teach me about how I was in relationship to what was going on, how was what I was kind of, my attitude was, attitude was to what was going on. And a common attitude for me was a fear. And so that, go into different situations, and sometimes the first indication that I had that I was afraid was I'd feel these twinges of tightening or my stomach turning upside down or something, these physical sensations. And I said, oh, this is interesting. And then I would notice, and then I'd have the more information. And then only then would I notice that I was maybe anxious. Or situations where I was really upset by a situation. And one of the kind of classic kind of experience for me was being really upset by some situation going on, wasn't going the way I wanted to, and trying to force myself to get the situation to be the way I wanted it. And for some reason, there was a pause in the situation. Maybe the people I was talking to had to, step aside for a little while. It happened once at the library. I really wanted this library book, and I insisted they had it. So they finally kind of went in the back room to look. And because I had developed this habit of paying attention to my body when I wasn't otherwise preoccupied, so then when they left me alone, I tuned into my body. And to my surprise, found that my body was leaning far over the library counter. Kind of tippy toes, I was trying to get a point made. And so that this is interesting. This posture says something about me. And so then I noticed how upset I was. It wasn't, and then by the time they came back, I had both feet firmly on the ground and I was sitting upright and I'd cooled down quite a bit. As it went on further, my practice, then at some point I noticed that the sensitivity of the body to what was going on me and was also translated to greater sensitivity around me. So when I was with other people in situations, I can kind of feel, some people say the energy, but I could feel through way in which I perceive the situation around me, my body would also respond to the situation. Certain parts of my body would activate it, or the tension would pick up. Different things, I'd feel different ways. And that helped me be more sensitive to the situation I was in, the people I was in. Very important piece of information that I couldn't have been as clever to understand if I was using my logic or my head to try to figure out what's going on here and why, what. But the body, we have these mirror neurons. We have this ability to empathize or to feel a little bit what other people feel. And so I think that operates a lot for many people through the vehicle of some of the senses, the sensations that occur in the body as we react, respond, receive the situations of the world around us and other people. And the biggest surprise for me was that greater sensitivity to the world around me gave birth in me to a growing degree of compassion. Compassion wasn't something that I had any interest in when I started doing my Buddhist practice. But in the wake of developing a much more sensitive, greater sensitivity, physical sensitivity to my environment and other people, greater sensitivity to my own physical experience, that gave birth, or gave me access to the feelings and the movements of compassion within me. So it wasn't so much a matter of thinking that compassion was a good idea and learning kind of mental tricks to try to look at the situation or perceive the situation in different ways. But rather, as the mind got a little bit quieter, thinking less actually, and a heightened sensitivity through the body, heightened awareness in the body, that to my surprise, I found that compassion became a more and more important quality of my life until it became central for how I live my life or something. And that was not what my intention was when I started Buddhist practice. If someone had said, come to Buddhism to be compassionate, I think I would have lost interest. because that was like, I don't know, I was just strange, right? And but it was one of the nice surprises of it, this practice. When I went to practice in Thailand, an important kind of step in this heightened and difficult appreciation of the body happened when I was practicing with a teacher there named Buddhadasa, a famous Thai teacher. And he wasn't leading the retreat at his monastery, but because he was old. But he was going to give the opening talk. He spoke English. So, you know, he gave it the talk. And I don't remember anything about the talk at all. But I was kind of sitting in the front row. And it was over, and I kind of lingered. And he got up to walk away. And as he was walking away, he had like an afterthought of something that he'd forgotten to say. And I think very few people heard it. But he said, don't do anything that takes you out of your body. Don't do anything that takes you out of your body. And I thought that was a strange statement. What do you mean by that? And so because it was so strange, so foreign kind of idea to me at the time how he said it, I started paying even more attention to my body and what was going on in my body. And what I noticed with that phrase, you know, reverberating in my mind over the next days of the retreat was how often I was not in my body. How often, one of the clearest ways I saw it was when I was ahead of my body. And, you know, we would have two meals a day at a monastery in Thailand, so they don't eat in the afternoon. And so meals were a big deal. And so I remember for lunchtime being hungry, and we had to walk across the large monastery, a monastery in the jungle. So we had to walk through the jungle and to get to the place where we ate. And we had to kind of walk downhill. And I noticed that as I was walking to the meal, I was leaning forward in anticipation for this important event. And not only was I leaning forward, but it was kind of like my center of awareness was ahead of my body, you know, towards where I was going, what I was going to get and all that. And I found that a very curious thing. And so then I would try, certainly I tried to straighten up and not be leaning into the food up ahead, but try to just lean back and be in my body and then bring that kind of awareness or energy of awareness back in so it's centered in myself. And that would last for a little while. And I noticed, you know, because I'd be ahead of myself because the food's so important, but because you know, partly because my the stability of the awareness to stay present wasn't so developed. And so my mind would, I would be there for a moment and then my mind would go up into the thinking and thoughts and anticipation of the food and I'd be leaning ahead and I'd come back. So it was this kind of seesaw going on, or I don't know if that's the right word, but going back and forth and coming back, coming back, coming back. And I found it useful to come back into my body, be in my body, be aware through my body. So that was an important lesson for me to watch. And to this day, I still watch that movement. I still watch, even when I give talks like this, I'm paying attention in the talk to what's going on in my body. I'm noticing if I get tense, some little, you know, tension in my stomach often or my shoulders or someplace. I notice where my, my weight is balanced in my body. If I find myself leaning forward a lot, when I'm giving a talk, sometimes that's fine. I'm just excited or into it and want to try to say something. But sometimes it's a sign that I've gotten nervous in giving a talk or concerned or feel like, oh, maybe I'm losing all of you and I got to make more effort to kind of, you know, whatever. And so I've learned to notice these movements, what goes on, to pay attention. So I look behind the scene and what else is going on here for me? What's going on in my mind? What's going on in my feelings, what's going on in my concerns about the situation. And sometimes I find that it's innocent and it's fine to be leaning forward, and sometimes I see, oh yeah, Gil, you got caught by some concern, and then I can make a course correction. I can kind of let go of those concerns perhaps or settle back. So I still to this day then you use the body as a reference point, come back and come back, come back. And it's so important, the idea of being present in the body, that I would prefer to emphasize the word bodyfulness more than mindfulness. Partly because the body is important, but also The body is a vehicle, is an avenue through which we are aware. And so the more we're sensitive, the more we're awake to what goes on in the body, the more we register or allow to receive the experiences of the world, what's going on, through the filter or through the vehicle of our body, I think the stronger the awareness becomes. If we are only knowing what's going on through our cognitive abilities of the mind thinking and having words and ideas of what's going on, as valuable as that is, it becomes kind of... all too easy to become disconnected from some of the deeper wellsprings of our emotions, our body sensations, our inner intelligence, understanding what's going on. So how to have both, I think, is really the issue. But to come back, so when I first started, no one asked me this, but when I first started practicing, or just before I started practicing Buddhist meditation, if someone had asked me where I was aware from, where in your body are you aware? Where's consciousness or something? I would have pointed to my brain. And then after some years of practice, if someone had asked me, where are you aware? I would have pointed to my whole body. I wouldn't prioritize the brain anymore, but it's the whole body that somehow together is a unit. And then at some point, if someone asked me, where are you aware? I would no longer point to the body, but I would take my arms and somehow just go like this. You know, kind of big arc circles everywhere. It's all awareness. There is no difference. Awareness is everywhere. It just doesn't have a location just in me. But that locationless sense of awareness kind of permeating everything that I'm aware of and present arises out of being grounded in the body, being present in my body, here in this place. So when I meet with people and talk with people, I feel that part of one of my practices or kind of approaches or guidelines for how to be present for people when I talk with them, especially if I'm really going to be present in a good, full way, is I try to have 50% of my attention here in my body, in my inner life, and 50% of my attention with the person that I'm talking to. And you would think that, you know, if it's a really important conversation, it's important to really pay attention to the person and kind of forget about yourself and just be kind of absorbed in what they're saying, really listen well. But I found that, for myself at least, that I don't listen as well if I'm completely into their conversation as I do if I'm 50-50 there. Because if I'm completely listening and absorbed in what they're saying, I'm not picking up all the information of what's really happening in the bigger picture of it that's available to me when I'm grounded and centered in my body, aware of myself as well. It's kind of like, one of the things I've become aware of, I'm aware of my reactions and responses, my interpretations, how I am, what I'm doing in the response to it. And so I'm better able to put those aside, my bias, put aside my various thoughts, my reactions, my feelings, so in fact I can listen better. And if I'm 100%, if I'm completely absorbed in the conversation, don't notice what's going on for me, the filters I'm putting up, the reactions I'm having, then in fact I'm not actually listening as fully or as cleanly as I could. And if I'm too preoccupied with myself, if I'm completely absorbed in myself, which occasionally has happened, where I start thinking about something in conversation, I hope this doesn't ever happen to you, and I realized that, what were they saying? what was that they said? And, I'm not really, I'm not tuned into them. So the idea of being 50-50 is very helpful for me. The 50 here and 50 there. And this idea of the awareness is everywhere and it's not really, just my body or in my brain, translates to me that when I'm very present in this 50-50 way, there's a very nice way in which feeling in which I disappear. That the sense of having boundaries or being here in a solid, I don't know what to say exactly before without giving the wrong impression, but I'm here without being caught in a self-identity. I'm here without caught in a self-referential point that, I'm here and that person's there. And it isn't that I'm oblivious of myself, because I'm very attuned to what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what my bodily sensations are, what's going on here, but I don't tie it all together in some kind of self-identity concept. That's and so the idea of letting go of identity and letting go of concept in an ordinary kind of way, kind of being kind of transparent as the feeling, is a safe and appropriate thing to do if we're closely in touch with ourselves. And in fact, that close, deep mindfulness or attention to our inner life is a way of kind of disappearing. But disappearing in a responsible way because we know what's going on. The Zen master Dogen, a Zen teacher in ancient Japan, had a very succinct way of talking about Buddhist practice. He said, to study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And to forget the self is to be awakened by all things, to be recognized by all things. And so this idea that we're studying the self, we're studying what's here, but if you really hear in a full way, if you bring mindful presence to hear and learn to let go of a lot of the ideas and thoughts and reactions we have, we really be here for ourselves, there's something about the self that disappears. You don't die. You're still, actually, you don't get diminished by this, but something about of the self disappears. So study the self disappears. You forget the self. You forget your self-consciousness. And then if you forget your self-consciousness, then rather than you defining yourself, you deciding who you get to be, for Dogen, the Zen teacher, the whole world will tell you who you are. The world tells you what's going on. So you don't have to be the one in charge of deciding. You get to be who you are, and the world will tell you what that is, be a mirror or inform you. When I guess it's connected to this theme of the body, when I was in a Zen monastery, I discovered that if I didn't eat so much, that I could get more concentrated when I meditated. And so I went to my teacher and said, what do you think of this? Not eating so much so I can get concentrated. And I kind of thought he had said, you know, cut it out. Just, but what he said, that's fine for you to do. But when people around you tell you that you should be eating more, listen to them. So that was a great advice. So you take the feedback, you know, let the people tell you what's going on. So, bodyfulness, to be in your body, to be connected to your body, to not be disconnected to your body. It's so easy in the life that many of us live to be disconnected to the body. I think screen time is lost time for the body. Many people spend a lot of time in front of a screen. They're not really that in touch with their body. It's kind of lose touch with their body. Sometimes you see it in their posture. Slumped over or somehow. Their posture is often not that strong and good when you're sitting in front of a TV or a computer or something. Also, it kind of belongs to the brain, the activities of what happens on the screen. And if you do more and more of that, it kind of reinforces and strengthens that and strengthens a disconnect with the body. Some people have very difficult emotions that they're dealing with in their life. They have trauma, for example, or whatever. And so, or some people have religious teachings that somehow certain feelings and emotions are not right, or certain experiences of the body are not good. And so there's a variety of conditions for why some people get disconnected with their body, don't validate or value their experience of being in a body. And so when we disvalue it and get disconnected with our body, we actually lose a big part of who we are. We lose we lose access to the full holistic sense of what a human being is about. And so it's kind of dissatisfying, or it feels like you're kind of off. And the odd thing that can happen sometimes when you feel off or feel something's not working is some people then will continue or do more of the dysfunctional behavior they're doing because they think that's how they're going to compensate. So you feel uncomfortable, so you eat. Eating makes you feel uncomfortable, so you eat more. Or you feel uncomfortable in some way, and sad or depressed, so you watch TV, and it maybe makes you feel worse, and you don't quite identify it as a TV, so you watch more or something. There's sometimes a reinforcing pattern of this that can happen. An interesting idea that I read of many years ago also that was interesting for me about the body was if your body is not settled in the field of gravity, if you're kind of resisting gravity, it doesn't mean that you become a couch potato or collapse to the gravity or lay flat on the ground, but if you can sit upright or stand upright, be upright in a good, upright, aligned way, and then relax with the pull of gravity, then the mind can get quieter. If you're fighting gravity, not that you're intentionally fighting it, but if you're tense and holding yourself and bracing yourself, what that does is actually kind of disconnects you with your body and makes the chatter of the mind, the busy, restless activity of the mind, gets reinforced. As we relax, let go of the way we're braced or defended or held or resisting gravity or holding us up against it, that as we let go of that and relax, the mind becomes quieter. There's less drive to think and figure out and react to what's going on. So as we settle into the body and get to know the body, one of the things we can learn to do is to relax, to soften the body. As the body relaxes and softens, then it gives us more access to what's going on in the body, more information, more sensitivity. As we continue that process of becoming more sensitive to the body and relaxing more deeply, you'll find that your thinking mind, your restless mind, will think less, become quieter and less restless and more peaceful. If you try to overcome a restless, agitated mind with the mind itself, it can be much more difficult. It's kind of like taking a muddy pond and not letting the mud settle and become the water becoming clear, but taking a stick and kind of stirring it up so it stays muddy. Coming back into your body, being connected to your body and relaxing your body is a way of leaving the mind alone, but helping it to relax and let go, to quiet down, settle down. So in this discourse that the Buddha gave called the Four Ways of Establishing Awareness, it begins with emphasizing sitting down to meditate and becoming familiar with your breathing. The physical experience of breathing. Breathing is a physical, if you're connected to your breathing, you're connected to your body. And as you begin tuning into your breath, noticing more, it helps you to arrive and be more fully in the present moment. Then it goes on and says, the instruction is, as you're breathing, paying attention to your breathing, breathe and notice your body. Notice that, and the expression is your whole body. Notice your body. Get familiar with the body. Tune into your body. Get to know. It's so important. Get to know it. So maybe as you continue breathing, breathe with your body. Breathe with awareness of your body. Let breathing kind of be all-encompassing somehow, or be the stabilizing force that helps you to stay there. And spend time letting the attention roam around your body. Get to know the body, feeling the global sense of being in a body. But somehow cultivate a heightened sensitivity of your body. That's the next instruction he gave. And then, what are the advantages of developing a heightened sensitivity of the body, being aware of the whole body, is it gives you access to something very important. And as I said, explained last week, it shows you a place, a time, when you have a choice between two different directions you can take. And you have some degree of choice over which of these two directions you can take. If you see this piece of information, as you become more aware of your body, you can become aware of whether your body is tense or not. And it kind of becomes kind of, you don't have to try to see if you're tense. The more settled and connected and aware you are of your body, at some point it'll stand out and highlights the places that you're tense when you're tense. In a way that maybe you wouldn't even notice as you go about your busy life, running around doing things. Sometimes there's a degree of tension that I carry with me in my body that I only tune into when I stop doing my life and sit down, close my eyes, and meditate. because the way I live my life, there's kind of certain kind of due attention that builds up in different places. And I don't really recognize or tune into it sometimes until I really sit down to meditate. And sometimes some of the deepest held tensions in our life are not so easily accessible in ordinary life, but only become accessible if you have a strong meditation practice and you can really get down and quiet and really develop this heightened sensitivity to what's going on. So at some point, you come to this fork in the road. And the fork in the road is to see that you have a choice between continuing to be tense or relaxing, and or trying to relax. And in fact, that's the next instruction the Buddha gave in this famous text on how to establish awareness. The instructions are to, once you are aware of the tension in your body, once you're aware of this whole body, the experience of the whole body, the next thing to do is to relax the body, to soften it. So if your shoulders are tense and you can relax it, relax. If your belly is being held, soften it. If your hands are tense, sometimes if you're some part of your body, your legs or your arms are kind of a little bit braced against life, against something, what's going to happen, you're afraid, relax the way in which you're braced. If your tension in your face and your eyes, soften that. So to intentionally allow yourself to relax, if you can't relax intentionally, which is not always easy to do, some of the tension we carry with us is more locked in rather than something we have choice over, we still have a choice to soften around it, to bring our attention into it, to breathe into it, to hold it in our presence. Because if you hold physical tension in the field of awareness, hold it kindly, openly, in an open way, it's kind of like giving breathing room. And as our tension has breathing room in its own time, it'll begin to relax. Because bringing attention and holding an awareness, if that's what the main thing your mind is doing, that has a very different effect than if the main thing your mind is doing is worrying about something. So if you're worrying, it might reinforce the tension you're holding. But if you step away from the worry and just hold the tension and awareness, bring careful attention to feel it, you're not feeding it anymore. And as you're not feeding it or reinforcing it, it has a chance to relax and let go. So the first instruction the Buddha gave in this text was become familiar with your breathing. As you become familiar and present for your breathing, then become aware of your body as a whole, heightened sensitivity to your body. And then as you begin noticing that there's tension in your body, within reason, relax and soften. Within reason means don't make it the only thing you do, and with high expectations that you can, and you're always tinkering with your body to relax. But to some degree, relax, settle in. As you do this, you'll find that the mind gets quieter. As the mind gets quieter, and as long as you don't fall asleep, and you stay alert, you'll find you'll develop a higher sensitivity to your body, more presence for your body, and your body becomes something that starts feeling more and more as an important part of who you are, important reference point. In fact, the deepest forms of well-being that we can have, I think, are really experienced more fully if we're present in our body. We can have more compassion, we can have more love, more joy, more happiness. It can be experienced more fully, more cleanly, when we're rooted and centered in our body. If we're disconnected to our body, if we're not noticing our body, then chances are we're not so present. And even if we are present, chances are we're in our thoughts and reactions to what's going on. And even if we're not reacting so much to what's going on and thinking what's going on, if we're still not connected to our body, so much of the information and the full experience that we're having is not available. And the full experience is what gives us the fuller experience, the fuller sense of the beautiful qualities of a lived life. So your body. So what relationship do you have with your body? Is your body your friend? Is your body your enemy? Is your body a total stranger? How is it with your body? So I could go on and on, but I think that's enough about the body. So maybe we have a few minutes if you'd like to ask any questions about this. I'd appreciate hearing questions or comments if you'd like. Yes, please. And if you could use the mic that down, Jim, down on the floor. Yeah. And maybe if you could, is it green light? If you can say your name first, that would be nice.
I'm Jennifer. Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of what was coming to me as you were speaking, I've done different types of mindfulness and different types of meditation, and I just was curious as to when you were talking about the mind a lot, what you think about mantras versus being still in the body. Because I've done, you know, both.
Huh?
So yeah, what do you think about that in terms of meditation or just what you were just explaining?
Mm-hmm. I think a few things. I think mantras can be a great meditation practice. It tends to have a different result than mindfulness meditation. And so it depends a little bit on the result that you're hoping for. Sometimes mantras can be a great way of relaxing. And in fact, some of the people who've taught mantra meditation do so very explicitly for the purposes of deep calm and deep relaxation. It also is, for some people, a very good way of developing not only deep calm, but also deep concentration. And some people use mantras to experience some of the intense forms of joy, rapture, that can happen with strong meditation. Sometimes with mantra meditation, because of the deep calm and presence that it gives, when they come out of that meditation, there's a heightened mindfulness and attentiveness and understanding of what goes on around them. But sometimes what happens when people do mantra meditation, they get absorbed in the mantra, but they're not connected to themselves. And so they're not really a heightened awareness of their body, their feelings, their thoughts, what's going on. And sometimes it's possible to use mantra as an escape from oneself, escape from the world. And I've known, as a teacher, especially happens on retreats, it happens on a somewhat regular basis as someone comes to our retreats who's done many, many years, sometimes decades, of a mantra practice. They're quite good at it. And they can get really blissed out, really calm. And I could see that they're disconnected from themselves. And they keep using that as an escape. They can go to this nice spiritual state, think they're spiritual, think it's good. But they really escape. And often it's because they have reason to want to escape. There's some real troubling aspect of their life which they've been trying to avoid for a long time. And so they come to our retreats and we say, while you're here, this is not what we teach, so maybe you've had years of doing that. And sometimes I'll say, you've been doing this for years and years and probably it's getting old for you. And they say, oh yeah, it's getting old. You know, even though they say it's ecstasy, you know, it's kind of like they're getting tired of it. And they have sense, they have some intuition that something's not quite working. So usually they're quite willing to stop doing it. And that's what you say, why don't you just try stop doing it here? And rather than trying to get concentrated and blissed out, why don't you simply notice what's going on? And then what will often happen, those people will come back a few days later for the meet with the teacher, with the wide eyes, and they say, I didn't know there was so much going on. And sometimes they have to face some really difficult things. They're demons because it's been waiting for them for years, and now finally they're ready to say hello and discover who's really in there.
Thank you. That was great.
So in the back, you can pass it back somehow. Thank you. And I think I'm going to start asking. I think it's a nice idea for to ask people, all of you, to say your name before you speak, because I think it helps me. It helps also each other in a sense of community here if we hear names. And I'd appreciate it.
Hi, my name's Irene. everything you said is so true. I, in the last year, kind of taught myself how to swim. And I've developed this daily habit now of getting up in the morning and going swimming, and I'm doing lap swimming. And it's really fascinating. I have the best days ever. I mean, it's the total focus and concentration on the breath, because you have to, and the body at the same time. And I was just thinking while you were talking that probably many different kinds of, you know, athletics would also do that. And when I started doing this on a daily basis, you know, in the last few months, I noticed that my meditation practice in the evening is better. And I noticed, like, even tonight when I was sitting here, the breathing kind of, it's changing. It's like it's almost resembling the swimming, the rhythmic breathing of the swimming. And I find that it gets me very calm and very relaxed.
Nice.
And
yeah.
you don't lose touch with the body.
You can't lose touch. If you're going to develop your swimming, you have to be very in touch with your body. So developing this heightened sensitivity that way is a great thing. It's a little bit aside from what you're saying, but I'd like to say it anyway, that example of swimming, like someone who has a swimming practice and swimming, you know, it's pretty routine, right? You're doing laps, and from the gross point of view, like stepping back and looking at the, you know, there's not very your strokes are not that different from each other, you know, they're all pretty much the same thing, you know, it's pretty boring, the same stroke. But in fact, if you're cultivating swimming from the inside, you're developing higher and higher sensitivity to subtle differences, and slowly finding how to swim a little bit better, and you know, ever so slight, you know, differences, and that ability to distinguish very subtle differences is the root of the English word skill, because the word skill means originally meant to differentiate. And still, in Norwegian, it means to separate out. And so part of Buddhist spirituality, the idea of cultivating skillfulness in Buddhism, in a variety of ways, keeps going back to this idea of being able to differentiate two different possibilities, or differentiate something and become skillful and know how to make these small, subtle differences. So the same thing happens in meditation. That by just like with swimming, you do swim day after day after day, and you make these you start seeing differences that are very subtle but are very consequential over time. You swim better and all kinds. Same thing with meditation. If you're actually paying attention to what goes on and are sensitive to it, then you start seeing subtle differences that maybe you didn't know existed at first. And those subtle differences you begin finding your way. The subtle difference between being tense and being relaxed, for example, or being more present, or having more attentive. And so slowly over time, we're becoming more skilled by being able to make more subtle differentiations. And that's that ability to become skilled helps us then become more and more present and more relaxed, more free, more calm in the meditation as well. So
what I notice is that what I've begun doing is when I swim, I focus on my breathing. And everything else just falls into place. And when I lose my concentration, I notice it really makes a difference in just the flow through the water. And so I guess a lot of people might say you should pay attention to the mechanics, which will come, and you do have to practice it. But I notice the breathing makes all the difference in how the mechanics fall into place.
But can you be, as you're focusing so much on the breath, are you also aware of the rest of your body?
Oh, yeah, I have to. Yeah, definitely. And I noticed how the mechanics change as I keep my breathing, you know.
I suspect that some of that is almost like an innate intelligence that's making the differentiation. Not so conscious and cognitive that you're planning and thinking, but the system figures out the efficient way to do it. Mm-hmm. Same thing with meditation. So thank you. And I hope that this week that you will take a heightened interest in your body, and regularly through the week, and I don't know when you want to do it, but find ways where throughout the day you're reminded to just simply notice what's going on with your body, just that, and to get a little bit more information what's going on, what you learn about yourself, what you notice about yourself, if you tune in to what's happening in your body in different situations through the week. It's a great thing to do. Thank you.